This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 237, where today CJ and I are going to catch up on a ridiculous amount of cloud news. Recorded live February the 1st, 2018.
Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems in ever narrower timeframes with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focused on higher value tasks versus the nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations? Nintex can make that happen. With the Nintex platform, work flows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No-code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out for free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/trynwc.
CJ!
This is going to be like election night in the cloud news. We're going to be banging through things quick and fast.
Yeah. Hey, it's good. We got a ton of stuff that we want to cover today. All kinds of stuff from Microsoft to Office 365 to Azure, Amazon Web Services, containers, spacey stuff.
Man, we got a lot of stuff. We've got something for everybody.
Yeah. So, hey, we'll do a quick little banter here before we start diving into this, because I know we got a lot we want to get through. What's up with your world?
Oh, man. All sorts. Crazy busy at the moment, actually. I'm actually doing some Microsoft Teams bot development, which has kind of been pretty interesting. So yeah, you know, Microsoft Teams, the bot framework, obviously, that we do quite a bit with already, but Microsoft Teams is a channel that you can connect to with your bots. And so I've been working on some sort of bot, I guess, additional bits of work in our bots to support Teams and going, adding the ability to do all sorts of stuff in Teams, not just through Skype for Business now, but also in Teams. And because Teams supports more than Skype for Business in terms of, you know, user interaction. So they support rich cards, buttons, all that sort of stuff. And so Microsoft Teams actually has some extensions for the bot framework that let you sort of build more interactive and rich sort of end user experiences. So I've been diving into that and trying to get my head around, you know, what we're going to do there and what's possible and developing some of those things. We've had some of this for quite a while, but we're just sort of adding to it really. So it's been really fun.
Awesome. Very cool.
How about you?
Man, I've just been busy working on content around my course. I've got a bunch of content that's recorded for a complete rehash of my deployment to production chapter, which contains a bunch of new things that Microsoft has added to the SharePoint framework over the last couple months. Site collection at catalogs, ALM APIs, even though they're in preview, I still covered them, and some other stuff there. And then this week, I've recorded all the content, waiting. Part of my production process is moving with that to assemble the lesson. But while I'm waiting on some stuff to come back to me, working on some new content around branding and design. So some best way to organize things, best practice stuff, Office UI Fabric core stuff, things that I had to cover before I start jumping into the web frameworks, because can't really talk about Fabric React when you don't cover Office UI Fabric somewhere else. So getting that stuff done.
Yeah, gotcha.
But hey, I do have a couple things here I want to share with people here that there'll be some links in the show notes. The day that this episode comes out, we got some pretty epic. Well, actually, let me come back to that in a second. A long time ago, a little bit of self-promotion, I built two servers for local Hyper-V hosting virtual machines, but they were built as silent rigs. So they were built with as minimal fans, as much passive cooling, not liquid cooling, but as much passive stuff as possible. And I just don't use them anymore. So I've got one of them that I've posted up to eBay for sale. As I'm trying to get 15 or 20% of the cost of what I originally paid to build it. So I think it's a $5,000 box. Well, at the time it was a $5,000 box. Clearly it's not worth that now.
Wow.
But dual quad core Xeons, 32 gigs of RAM, 3 gig graphics card is in there. Pretty nice. Badass box.
Nice virtualization rig.
Yeah, exactly. And then I got another thing coming up February the 13th. I'm doing a webinar with Waldeck MasterCars, another SharePoint MVP, where we're going to discuss and do demo heavy of the Office 365 CLI. So if anybody wants to learn a little bit about how to manage your SharePoint and Office environment using something other than PowerShell, join us on that day.
Very cool.
And then the last thing that you and I have to figure out a time to reschedule our podcast for next week that we normally do our recording. We usually do these on Tuesdays. And I'm not going to be able to make that because I'm getting in a car and I'm driving south and I'm going to go watch Falcon Heavy attempt their first test flight on the day that this episode comes out.
Man, I wish I could be there for this. Like, honestly, I really wish I could, but life is crazy right now. And I can't make it to Florida from the other side of the country, which absolutely rips my nightie, my friend, rips my nightie. But I will be watching the webcast for sure.
Yeah, I know it's going to be rough for you not to be there. I mean, I was really hoping that you're going to be able to make it over for that, but...
Yeah, me too.
We'll see.
Man, of all of the timing, this is the wildest it's been for 6 months, I think. So it's just poor timing.
Yeah. Oh, no. I get it. It's going to be a crazy event, right? Because I was talking to another friend of mine, Ben Stejink, who lives here in the same city with me, and he runs the MSIT Pro Cloud podcast. We were like, well, are you going down? Yes. Why are you going down? Because they're going to be doing the Falcon Heavy again. So you'll get to see it launch. They're talking about 700,000 to 1 million people are going into the area to be able to see it, which rivals the moonshot back in 1969.
Wow.
Yeah. So like where you're going to go to see it and everything. And of course, everybody's like, oh, well, you can see it from your driveway. You can see it from Jacksonville. I'm like, yeah, but it's three boosters.
Hey, I can see it from Seattle too.
Exactly.
Just on a webcast. And it'll be bigger than where you could see it from in the majority of places down there.
The thing that's so cool about this one is that, I mean, it's three boosters. So with Falcon, that's 9 engines per booster. So 27 Merlin engines. Mm. When they did their static fire last week, apparently it was just the people all over the Space Coast were tweeting about how loud it was.
Big butter boom.
Yeah, and you got two of them are flying back. Two are returning back to the launch site. So it's going to be incredibly loud, but... Yeah,
it's going to be wild. Like, if it successfully launches, and if the boosters separate and they fly back, imagine watching two of them flying back at the same time. Like, are they in coordination so they don't like smack into each other?
That's what. They're going to two different landing sites. There's LZ1 and LZ2, but they're right next to each other.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
I guess they figured this out.
Yeah, they're smart guys. I mean, it is rocket science, and they have.
Hey, it is rocket science. I like that. Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. I mean, the other advantage related to going down there is, let's face it, I mean, Elon, there's a distinct chance that this is not going to be a successful flight. Now,
there is a significant possibility. It's going to be a really big pop.
Yeah, and I think Elon has even said that his first hope is that this thing at least gets far enough away from the pad so that if it does explode, it doesn't destroy the pad.
because it's taking off from 39A, right?
Yeah, you're going right where I was going to go. Yep.
And there's quite a lot of things that can damage nearby, like the pad itself, for example,
yep.
Which didn't, you know, it took them a wee while to retrofit from shuttle and put their own equipment up there and all that sort of stuff. There's also a really large SpaceX hangar right next door to that pad, which mm-hmm. is where they put the rocket, you know, they do the final prep of the rocket and all that sort of stuff. And so I reckon if this thing has a bit of a leak and or something goes horribly wrong on the pad, you kiss goodbye to that hangar as well. Like it's pretty close.
It is. I mean, not only that, you got the tower that was, you know, there for all the space shuttle launches and mm-hmm. there's a lot of stuff with this that I think that there's a little bit of a concern there, but I mean, hey man, if you're there when this thing goes boom, that's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah.
I hope it's successful because I would love to see, if it's successful, if it's a complete success, they get all three boosters back, two coming back to launch site, one's going on the drone ship because it's going to be too far out. And it's going to be a successful test flight of Falcon Heavy and Elon's red Tesla is going to be orbiting Mars because that's the stretch part of the mission. I love this.
There's a lot of what ifs, isn't there?
There's a lot of what ifs, but they're just so cool.
It's so cool. I really hope they're successful. I think it'll be super cool just to silence the naysayers and the pundits.
God.
And just get this thing into orbit. That'll be great.
Oh, yeah. It'll be very, very
cool. Dude, even if it's Tesla is orbiting Earth, I think that's pretty cool.
Absolutely, man. That's incredible, right?
Mars, that's a stretch goal. If they get it into Earth orbit, that's pretty decent in my book.
Anyway. Yeah, definitely. Hey, we got a lot of stuff to cover today. You want to start diving into some news?
We should, because we've got quite a bit.
While many IT teams struggle with the impact of deploying Office 365, Zscaler customers are experiencing 40% or greater network performance across file download times, as well as TCP and DNS connection times, compared to using next-gen firewalls and UTMs to route Office 365 traffic locally to the internet. While you may know Zscaler as the leader in cloud security, they also have hundreds of customers who are processing over 1.2 petabytes of Office 365 traffic monthly through the Zscaler cloud. Visit www.zscaler.com to learn more.
All right, I'm going to kick us off here, CJ, with some news here that is kind of a continuation on some stuff that we've been watching lately, which we covered a couple episodes ago, this emergency patch massive security issue that has come up recently around the Spectre and Meltdown and Spectre?
Mm-hmm.
And gosh, sorry, I got the link up here. And of course, all these autoplay videos are blasting in my ears. I'm trying to talk to you. But Intel released a fix, a hardware or a firmware fix for a lot of their stuff. And it's, as you put it in air quotes, a fix. And Microsoft has seen a lot of machines behave not so good about this. Intel was saying that, hey, we've noticed a few things have been unpredictable and there have been some stability issues with it. But what they didn't say was, it's causing some people to lose data. And so Microsoft kind of came out and they're like, this is ridiculous. We're doing an out-of-band update and we're going to disable the Intel fix.
So, yo, dog, I've got a fix for your fix.
Talk about I know that there's been rumors of a Microsoft and Intel, the relationship has been a little stressful. Man, if this doesn't show stress right now, I don't know what does.
Years ago, there was the leak of some NT source code. I think kernel code. It was probably, 8 or 9 years ago now. It was quite a while ago. But what was funny about that is in the source code, there are comments about certain vendors and workarounds in the Windows kernel for those certain vendors. Let's just say suboptimal patterns with drivers. Right? Intel was one of them. NVIDIA was another. And AMD were another. And back in the day, NVIDIA, I think, between NVIDIA and AMD, they're responsible for 98% of blue screens in the world. And so there were comments in the code that were like, this is to get around such and such crappy driver, blah, 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 blah. This is to stop crashes, yada, yada, yada. If only these people would build drivers properly, blah, blah, blah. It was pretty funny. This sort of feels similar. you're not doing your job properly, so we're going to have to work around you.
And it's epic.
It's painful.
It really
painful.
Is.
Painful, yeah. Oh, well, that's... But still, hey, it was the biggest security hole of all time, so...
Yeah. So far...
Pretty big deal in general. Yeah. On to slightly brighter news. Teams, Microsoft Teams, how I mentioned I'm doing some bot stuff. They're actually getting a bunch of new features rolling out, which is pretty nice to see. There's a couple of articles here that we'll link to in the show notes. One's entitled, Microsoft Teams Gets Tighter App Integration, Revamped Command Box and Slash Commands. So Teams has rolled out a new version or is rolling out a new version very soon. If you want to get access to this earlier, if you go into your Teams application and in the menu, it's really kind of obscure, but in the About box, I believe it is, there is a menu for enabling developer mode, which I think it's in About. Yeah, you've got to go into the About section. And then at the bottom, there's a little menu item called Developer Preview. And I believe you can see all these things in the Developer Preview once you turn that on. All it does is log you out. You've got to log back in again and you get a new version. Anyway, it's pretty cool. They've got a new store that's showing up, makes it way easier to find bots and new tabs and apps that you can bring into Teams. So it makes that stuff a lot more visible. They're also doing, what have we got here? Being able to command apps directly from the command box. So doing the at symbol and then bringing up a bunch of, commands that you could fire off to apps directly. And then also slash commands, in Slack, you could do slash commands, same kind of deal.
And, oh, cool.
And Teams.
know, that was one of the updates. That's nice.
Yeah, that was the first one. The second one is what I think is actually more interesting. It's on TechNet of all places, but there's a blog post by Matt Sozman called Microsoft Teams, Making Meetings Better. And so this is kind of, we're actually going to do a deep dive show about Teams and Skype and calling and things like that on Office 365 at some point. But this kind of goes down that path of, hey, Microsoft are bringing Skype and Teams together over time, and meetings is kind of the next frontier that they're tackling. And so being able to hold meetings within channels and Teams and sort of manage your team meetings all from within Teams, I thought was pretty interesting. Anyway, you should read the blog. It's pretty cool. Basically, it's bringing over a bunch of the functionality that we had for Skype for Business directly into Teams, like being able to join meetings, chatting with participants in the meeting, but just doing it all from within the Teams client itself. You can schedule channel meetings, stuff like that. Oh. So more of Skype and Teams coming together.
Oh, very cool. Hey, going along that same theme of that one aspect of what you were just talking about, where how Teams is getting some of the capabilities that Skype for Business had. So it's kind of unifying the clients. Speaking of unifying the clients, this just came out this week. We're a little delayed on recording this week. We normally record on Tuesdays. Today, we're doing it on a Thursday. And I'm glad we did that because some news came out on Tuesday, which it seems every time we record, we see news.
So it's Tuesday, isn't it? Mm.
There's a post here on the Office 365 blog that we'll have linked. It's in the techcommunity.microsoft.com site, where the title of it is Shared Office Codebase for Windows, Mac, iOS, and Androids. Means more features for users faster. And basically what they're doing is they've unified the code base so that now parts of the code base. It doesn't look like they've done it for all of it. But it's the first time in 20 years that they share the same code base across all of these different platforms. So what it means is that when they create a new feature, it will be much easier to roll that feature in to different clients. So like I'm on Mac OS. I use Outlook 2016 for Mac. I've got Outlook on my iPhone. And I know that there's a lot of people out there that are using Outlook for Windows. And for a while, we didn't have any group support or any group capabilities inside or even add-in support inside of the Outlook for Mac client. All that stuff was going to Windows first. And now that we see Microsoft doing this, it's really nice to see them that now that it will not be as big of a deal for them to be able to have those features go across all the different platforms. I'm sure there's some compiler, you know, if statements and switches that are going on inside of there for the different platforms, like, you know, Mac's got the touch bar.
Oh, sure, yeah.
In the latest MacBooks. But still, this is a huge thing for not only, it's a great thing for us as users, but I got to imagine the engineers over at Microsoft are like, oh my God, thank God we don't have to sit there and new feature. Oh, now you got to add this new feature to this client, to that client.
Yeah. My understanding is it's been a really long time coming. Like, they've been working on this for years and years and years. Ever since Office started going down the route of delivering for iOS, you know, versions for iOS, which was, gosh, that was coming on, I don't know, 5 years ago now, I suppose? Years ago? Something like that. It's been a while now. Yeah, so it's been a really long time coming. And I can only imagine the amount of work to get something like this to workers. But, you know, they've all got unique front ends, they've all got unique UIs and all that. So there's still plenty of per-platform work. I don't think they're going to look the same anytime soon, or even if, I doubt they're even aiming for that, right? But the goal is to be able to, you know, you build some new thing in the Excel calculation engine in Windows and you get those things on iOS and all the other places faster than previously. Because it always used to be, well, now you've got to backport it or port it across to Mac and iOS and all that sort of stuff. So it'll make that much, much easier.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I got some news around SharePoint from our friend Chris McNulty, actually, over in the SharePoint team, who is updating us on some content services. So, hey, guess what? ECM is coming back, baby. It's like, whoa, remember that set of features that were delivered in SharePoint 2013, which were really awesome around SharePoint enterprise content management with like records management and like metadata and all this sort of stuff. Microsoft seems interested in ECM again, which is kind of interesting. They've added some updates. I don't think this will be the last of them either that we see. That they talk about things like predictive indexing and queries. They've got this new thing called attention views, which let users see a set of documents that require additional work, such as missing metadata, just sort of quoting from the blog here. Bulk metadata updates, that's kind of nice. Being able to select a bunch of documents and update metadata across them all at once. This is kind of curious, like ECM is getting a little bit of love. I'm not sure if Microsoft are making the call to say, hey, well, it's been a little while since we gave any of our ECM features any love in SharePoint. Maybe we shouldn't. Maybe we should finish some of those features or add some more into ECM sort of capabilities. You know how Microsoft forgets about things for a while and then they come back to it? I think this is one of them.
Yep.
And I think they realize how important SharePoint's core mission in life right from the very beginning of time was documents, right?
Mm.
And then they kind of went down the web path for a while and the social path for a while and then, you know, all these sorts of things. And now they've come back to adding some more attention to ECM, which I think is great because it's kind of the core competency of SharePoint is documents, and it's nice to see some more focus put on that. And just for shits and giggles, so to speak, if you follow such things, Gartner, the Gartner Content Services Magic Quadrant, Microsoft...
Sorry. Go ahead. I'll turn my video off.
Sorry, me too. I'm trying not to snort laugh here. The Gartner Content Services Magic Quadrant... Apparently, Microsoft are in the top right box again, which is great. They're there with OpenText and Highland Software. They're the only three in the top right in terms of leaders. Yeah, that's all.
Okay, well, I'll continue there.
Oh, man, I love giving Gartner grief. You know, they're great. If you're into these things and you're interested in the report, go read it. But for some people, it's sort of a no-op, and other people, it's really important. So
sure,
take with it what you like.
Hey, I've got a bit of news here too. I was trying to find the link for this, but man, Microsoft makes it incredibly hard to get a link to an item that's on the roadmap to share a status update with someone.
Mm.
I got even the emails that come out to tenant admins that say, hey, this is coming and this is related to this item. You click on it, you go log into your office.
It's into your, yeah.
And
it's
then,
super annoying, right?
Yeah, it's like, oh, well, now I got to go back. Okay, let me log in. And then it takes you back to the homepage of the portal. Like, no, show me the item. So I got to click the link again. So it's like, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't have a link to share with you on this. Trust me, it's in the roadmap somewhere. But back at Ignite, Microsoft talked about a new SharePoint Online Admin Center that was coming.
Yeah, I heard about this.
They then had a preview of it that you could go sign up and get into, which was great. And then they shut it down. So if you didn't go jump in to apply to the preview, you couldn't go see what it looks like. And everybody's like, oh yeah, to be able to do this, you have to go into the preview site to be able to do this. I'm like, what if I'm not in the preview site? Like, oh, you have to wait until it becomes GA now. I'm like, what? So the preview was open and then it got closed. Well, hey, now they're starting to roll it out in February over the next few weeks. You're going to see the new admin center is going to start to be rolled out in SharePoint Online or in your Office 365 portal, rolling out to your tenant. They did say that they're going to be rolling it out and maintaining the old one and the new one, which... I don't know. My two cents is give us feature functionality in a preview mode. And when you say we're going to roll it out to everybody to start using it, shut down the old one. Let's not maintain two Azure portals. Sorry, Office 365 SharePoint Online admin portals. Let's not maintain two of these things. Let's just one thing. And if you don't like the UI or you don't like something about it.
I suspect they would love to do that. But I suspect their hands being forced by the new one not supporting everything the old.
That's my point, though. Wait, get the other one done and then roll it out. Anyway.
Yeah, nice idea. Chances of pretty low of that working. Anyway, yeah. Hey, Red Hat have bought CoreOS.
That's big.
If you're into containers and Docker and things like that, this is kind of big news. The press release from Red Hat is entitled Red Hat to Acquire CoreOS, Expanding its Kubernetes and Containers Leadership. So if you're not into Docker, you probably haven't heard about CoreOS. But in a nutshell, they built a, I want to say microkernel, but it's not really a microkernel, is it? It's sort of a very streamlined distro for running containers and putting your applications on CoreOS and in containers. I don't know why Red Hat want it. I guess I haven't really read enough about it yet, but it's kind of a big move for Red Hat and the container world. CoreOS is quite well adopted and popular, I guess, for want of a better word. And so Red Hat's commitment to the container ecosystem is pretty strong if they go ahead with this. So yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, CoreOS, they offer, so they offer the baseline, you know, OS stuff, but they also got some other products. So they've got CoreOS Tectonic. Yeah, Tectonic, I think I'm pronouncing it correctly, yeah. Which is a Kubernetes platform. They've also got CoreOS Key, spelled Q-U-A-Y, as in key, what's the right word? Like a road, a key, mm-hmm. or a dock or whatever, which is a enterprise container registry. So they've got a few products there that obviously Red Hat going to get into that game and offer them as well.
That is a really big acquisition in the container world too. I mean, that's a, I don't really know how to explain the significance there, but that was just a big eye opener when you saw that, where you saw it's a real consolidation of two mm-hmm. big open source companies in the container side, which, I mean, hey, let's see what this does too on what kind of an impact this has with Microsoft, because Microsoft and Red Hat are very good friends right now, with Red Hat doing a lot of support for Linux-based machines inside of Azure. So this could, I mean, we'll see where this kind of, what kind of stuff this does for the container space with Azure as well.
Yeah, I like the little quote at the end of the press release. It says, "The transaction is expected to have no material impact on Red Hat's guidance for its fourth fiscal quarter." I just thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, there's a little subtle thing.
Yeah. I guess Red Hat, are they public? Something like that. Anyway.
Maybe, yeah.
A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself, though? AvePoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery, from individual items to entire team sites. AvePoint can run backups up to 4 times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why AvePoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.avpoint.com.
Okay, Mr. Johnson, we have a boatload of Azure and other cloudy news to go through. Actually, before we do that, I'd like to throw out just 2 AWS mentions here for some stuff that they recently announced, because it actually overlaps into the Microsoft space. Mm. So AWS Lambda, that was the first kind of serverless-based thing where in Azure we have Azure Functions. AWS kind of invented, or at least they were first to market with this, with a product called AWS Lambda. Well, they have announced in middle of June, they announced .NET Core 2.0 support for Lambda functions. And the blog post that they published about it shows you using Visual Studio 2017 and the AWS toolkit for Visual Studio. The other thing too that they have announced is serverless ASP.NET Core 2.0 applications for support here. And what that's going to do is that's going to allow us to do things like leveraging Razor Pages, the Runtime Package Store, .NET Core Runtime Package Store versioning, and being able to use like the Microsoft.ASP.NET.Core.all namespace, being able to leverage all that stuff inside of the AWS toolkit and using that inside of your any applications that you're deploying over to Azure. So you've got, when you go install the latest toolkit for Visual Studio 2017, the AWS toolkit for 2017, you'll see a new section. You go under C#, and you'll see AWS Lambda. If you click on that, you'll see 4 different options. There's an AWS Lambda project and an AWS Lambda project with tests, both of those for .NET Core. And you have an AWS serverless application and serverless application with tests, both for .NET Core. So a lot of support for .NET Core and cross-platformy stuff inside of AWS.
That's pretty cool. Really cool.
Yeah.
I'd love to go play around with that stuff. I mean, I really like .NET Core, the way that's going, but I haven't done a lot with Lambda and on AWS, so lots of ideas and not enough time, that sort of thing.
Oh my God, tell me about it.
Okay, on to Azure land. Microsoft are buying a company called PlayFab. I hadn't heard of these guys before, but the way the article sort of talks about it is that they're a cross-platform gaming tool vendor. I'm on their website, and the sort of the products that they offer, so it's for game developers, right? The services for game developers across different platforms like Android, iOS, Windows, Unity, all that sort of stuff. But they offer services like player management, multiplayer, leaderboards, A/B testing, dashboards and reporting, real-time analytics, as well as things that they call live ops, which are things like for in-game messaging, content updates, promotions, and real-time segmentation and things. So what I'm guessing is Microsoft are going to roll these out into some sort of services in Azure for game developers to base their to the back end of their games on, and or services that their game can take advantage of, right, to do all these kinds of things rather than having to reinvent the wheel around multiplayer and reporting over what people are doing in your games and things like that. So that's pretty cool. So yeah, they've announced the acquisition for an undisclosed amount. But I just thought it was kind of interesting. This is, for a long time, Xbox Live has put a bunch, you know, game developers for Xbox Live have put a bunch of services in Azure that they've talked about at different conferences and things. But maybe we'll see a first-party game back-end service, sort of software as a service offering from Azure in the next wee while.
I've seen AWS spend a lot of time on it. I listened to the Google Cloud Platform podcast as well, and I know that they've got a pretty good, pretty strong push as well from GCP around gaming. I mean, it's a great use case to be able to use the cloud for that, to massive multiplayer online games and externalizing all the processing. I know Azure does it for Titanfall 2, does a lot of some graphics processing actually in Azure, even when you're playing locally.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's cool to see Azure adding those capabilities around gaming and seeing how people are going to take advantage of those.
Yeah, for sure. So we may see a first-party service from Azure around games. That'd be pretty sweet.
Absolutely.
Trying to capture some new markets there.
Absolutely. Hey, I got a little bit of an extension, too, on my AWS news I had a second ago. Microsoft also announced support for .NET Core 2.0 for app service on Linux. So that's... That to me is very similar to what I just talked about with AWS, where AWS said, hey, you can do .NET Core applications as an application inside of AWS. That's kind of like saying, hey, app service on Linux, you can do that inside of Azure. So now they announced at the end of January, actually yesterday or 2 days ago. Again, this is one of those Tuesday announcements that we would have missed if we had recorded earlier. Probably just change our schedule.
Just record on Wednesday. Yeah.
They announced general availability of app service on Linux and web app for containers back in September 2017, and they added additional language runtime for the built-in images.
Gotcha.
Support. There's another one, too, that I want to highlight. Jump in real quick. This is another quick one. Is they have a GA of three new capabilities with Azure Stream Analytics. I'm a big fan of Stream Analytics. I use it in my business. Now, the three things are... Two of them seem kind of edge casey kind of stuff. One of them is called substream support. And the idea here is that it really makes sense in like an IoT scenario or like connected cars or vehicles or something where the clocks are way out of sync with each other. This is allowing you to use a new keyword called over that allows you to look at a bunch of different things over a bigger time frame when you have like a specific kind of a timestamp ID that you've defined.
I see. So you sort of widen the window that you're looking at.
Yeah, you widen the window over a specific time without having to do a lot of additional stuff in your query. It does. I mean, I don't use this capability of the timing stuff so much, but I've read enough about Stream Analytics where I can see where this is definitely a challenge people deal with. Another kind of edge casey kind of a thing is query compatibility. So sometimes Microsoft... And they say in very rare cases, they have a new compatibility level that could introduce a breaking change for an existing job. And so what you now can do is inside your query, you can configure your query for a specific compatibility level so that before all queries ran on the latest version of the query engine in Stream Analytics, now you can pin yourself to one level so that when Microsoft adds new features, you don't have to be forced into those new features just yet that may introduce a backwards breaking change on you.
Oh, yeah. That's nice.
The one that I'm a big fan of because I use this, I've been using it in preview, so seeing it go GA is nice, is an option to have egress to Azure Functions. So Stream Analytics, I guess I should explain at the beginning what this is, but the idea here is that you can take multiple streams of data coming in and you can then do some processing and then send that data back out. Really good for like real live streaming of data. I use it not for live streaming of data, but I have jobs that I start and stop at different periods where I take data that's being exported from Azure App Insights and then I merge it with some other sources. Like for example, if you're watching a video of mine for my course, there are some details that are added to Azure App Insights. And then I can associate that with a JSON file that I upload from an extract for where my videos are hosted, as well as my different customer or different like corporate customers. And it allows me to say like, oh, I want this person watched this video. I know that when they watched that video at that time, the video had been updated as recently as X and it is this many seconds long. So I can see that, hey, they're 50% away through the video. They watched this many seconds of the video.
Gotcha.
So one of the things you can do, one of your export things you can do is egress to Azure Functions. So you can essentially take one or an array of records, send them over to a function to do some work. And the way I use that is that in the past, you can, when they're watching their videos, sometimes client-side stuff doesn't happen all, like, let's see, sometimes client-side events get lost. And so I have webhooks that are going to notify things. I use Stream Analytics to process the webhooks as well. What I do with that is that when I see specific events come across, it will take those events, package them up, and it sends them over to an Azure function, which effectively creates a, quote, synthetic event. So when someone says, I'm playing a video, sometimes the client-side event doesn't get fired, but the server-side one does. And if the server-side one does, I need to treat it like a client-side event and stick it into that.
Gotcha.
Stick it into a queue. So it allows me to essentially write a function. Think of it like this. If I'm doing a SQL function inside of, like, say, SQL Server, it allows me to have my select statement call an Azure function and spit out some records to it to go do some extra work, like, in parallel.
Yeah, nice.
Yep.
Very cool.
So two things there.
Groovy. We've got a couple of other nice things on the Azure side for developers, mostly managing Azure secrets on GitHub repositories. So you know how developers love to put credentials in their code?
Never.
Microsoft have a new thing. They love it. Microsoft has this new thing called Microsoft Credential Scanner Preview, aka CredScan, which will, I think it runs as like a web job or something like that. Anyway, so it basically crawls your code and looks for things like connection strings or Azure secrets that are exposed in your code and tells you about it. So you could be like, hey, this developer just checked in a blob storage key or something into code, and that's probably not a good idea.
Mm. This is a cool service too. I mean, seeing how they architected it, how it does a scan of your stuff, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. Obviously, once your key's in code and you've committed it, you're hosed and you've got to rotate your key, but at least you know you've got to rotate your keys. Kind of nice. The other one, finally, real quick, is if you're a Python, Ruby, or PHP developer, there's now Azure Storage SDKs for you.
Ta-da.
Ta-da. There you go. Hey, make it easier to work with Azure Storage.
Absolutely, yeah. I've got one last one too. Remember that thing called Azure Event Grid?
Oh, yeah.
It's basically like Service Bus, but for the messaging Service Bus, but for it's almost like a substrate now of Azure where everything can support Event Grid. And if you support Event Grid, then you can not only talk to it or have Event Grid talk to you. So no longer, you know, you have to go to the Azure function guys and say, hey, do you guys support Cosmos DB or do you guys support this? You go, it's like, no. Do you support Event Grid? Yes. Okay, go to the other one. Do you support Event Grid? Yes.
Pop an event on the grid. Other people can pop stuff off. Everybody's happy.
Exactly. Well, it's gone GA.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talked about it on the show quite a while ago when it first came out and it looked pretty interesting. The cool thing is you can build your own connectors for it, right? So you can build listeners and publishers and stuff like that, I think.
Yeah, that was really cool.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users and organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
All right, CJ, now the fun part of the show.
Picks.
Oh my God. Okay, so I'm going to let you go first. I have been frantically, when you've been doing news, I've been frantically trying to find a very specific link that's kind of like a deep link into a thread that I was absolutely roaring on the couch last night. My wife thought it was hilarious. And I've kind of found some stuff to it, but okay. I'll come back to it in a minute. I'm going to let you go first with one of your links, and then I'll do one of mine.
All right. Well, there's a big milestone. Both of mine are space related, but there's a big milestone for NASA. I think this week, if I'm correct, I can't remember the exact day, but it was the first time NASA put a satellite into space. And not only that, it's got special meaning for me because when you go to this website that we'll link to in the show notes, about Explorer 1, which was the first satellite. It's the 60th anniversary of America in space. One of the guys in the photo alongside Wernher von Braun, I should say, gosh, I'm getting all my pronunciation mixed up, is a guy by the name of William Pickering, who went to the same secondary school that I did in New Zealand and led JPL Labs for a really long time and helped put the United States in space. He ended up immigrating to the US and becoming a US citizen and was really key in the space race in terms of getting rockets up and getting the US into space. And so he was kind of, there's a very famous photo of these three guys and they're holding the rocket up above their head, or holding the satellite, I believe, above their head. And he's one of them. And so, 60 years in space.
That's really cool.
And Falcon Heavy's about to launch. I was like, man, why didn't they pick the day that America put Explorer 1 into space? How cool would have that been as a milestone?
Well, now remember, they were trying to, they originally were trying to do it back in November. And they were trying to do it earlier in January, but they didn't get it because there was the government shutdown. So they had to do a complete stand down of everything at NASA for about 3 days, I think. So they were ready to go, but they had to hold off on static fire and all that stuff. So,
gotcha. Yeah, so that's my first one.
Cool. All right, so I got one. This one, I have one space one that I'll do in just a minute. But to keep you with bated breath there, I've got one that's funny. You know this whole cryptocurrency thing?
No.
Yeah, right. So I got a new one for you. It's called Ponzi Coin. The world's first legitimate Ponzi scheme because money doesn't grow on trees. And if you scroll down inside the frequently asked questions, this is awesome. Can you actually make money off of this? Yes, it's possible. Yes, it's possible to cash out at 1/4 of the price. So you make money. To make money, you need to wait until the price triples from when you bought it. This seems like a great investment opportunity. Do I get all my money back? The response, no, this is a joke. Don't put any significant money in this. Is this a scam? Yes, it's very much a scam, as are 99% of the ICOs that are out there. Is this site secure? Yes, we use Equifax grade security.
Oh, the burn.
This is awesome.
This is like the onion of blockchain. You know what I mean? Like, somebody's gone, this whole cryptocurrency blockchain thing is complete horse stuff, and we're just going to completely take the mickey out of it. Like, I like this one. Step one, invest. Step two, shill. Step three, hodl. Step four, profit.
This is the, I love the last one. Is this coin pre-mined? Yes. It's not a good cryptocurrency scam if it doesn't involve pre-mined coins. I have pre-mined 200 Ponzi coins for testing purposes, and also because I like money.
It's classic. Man, this is awesome.
The guy actually had to shut it down because it was done as a joke, but people like dived in and started like using this. He's like, no, it's a joke.
God, it just goes to show the hype that's really behind cryptocurrency right now.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. You've seen those pictures where like there's no graphics cards on at like Micro Center or Fry's and everything because everybody's buying them up to mine coins.
Yeah, that's kind of silly.
I totally agree.
Dude, coins, like, yeah, you can't mine with graphics cards that you can buy over the counter anymore. Not profitably anyway, unless you've got free power. Cool. The other one that I've got is, again, space related, kind of sweet. So NASA are restoring all of the original Apollo era mission control consoles, because they're doing up the room. They're doing up the mission control operations room, which is where, you know, they managed a lot of the Apollo missions. Anyway, so it's been slowly degrading over time. This is in Houston, been slowly degrading over time, and there's a big new restoration going on. And this one is about $5 million is being put towards this. It will look as it did at the time of Apollo 11. However, they are restoring the consoles to the configuration and what they looked like during Apollo 15, which I think was the most sort of technically advanced that they got with the program. And all the consoles are going to be lit, and they're going to have displays, and they're not firing up all the original electronics, because it's kind of, I suspect if you put any electricity through these things, there might be a big fire. But so they're going to do all the backlighting and things like that and bring it back to what it used to look like. And so that includes the room and all the consoles that went along with it. Now, this room has been used for a bunch of different things, like Apollo, but also Shuttle as well. And so there's quite a lot of work that needs to go on. There's been a lot of smoking in that room. If you've ever watched documentaries to do with the space race and the Apollo, like that thing was like, you know, they basically hotboxed each other. And I don't know, you know, how secondary smoking works. I'm pretty sure everybody in there was like smoking a couple of packs a day. Because you see those photos, man, like you can hardly see the other side of the room. There's so much smoke in there. And if you've listened to or read Into the Black about the Shuttle program or Gene Kranz's autobiography, you know exactly how much smoking went on in those rooms. So needless to say, the carpet's trashed, the walls are trashed, the whole place is pretty trashed, and the consoles are trashed. And so they're going to do them all up. But I can't wait to visit when it's all said and done.
I saw you post this link, and when I first saw it, I thought that you were doing another link that I saw the other day, which was, you know, the guidance computer on Apollo 11 and the LEM and the lunar module. Mm-hmm. Someone has done a Kickstarter where they are reproducing those, including a circuit board, and you could punch in the commands like a noun verb kind of a thing, and you can get for like $50. They'll send you just the stuff that you need for the programming of it and to 3D print your own. But the fully working one is like $500 to $700. It's pretty cool.
Oh my God, I want one.
I need to go dig that up then and make that one of my links, I guess.
Oh, come on.
I'll go find it for you.
Damn, that, target acquired.
Let's see, anyway. in my history, no. Okay, I'll go find it later for you. I saw that this morning.
Wow, but that sounds cool.
My last pick, though, or my real pick. So yesterday, it's not so much what happened yesterday, it's the comments. So yesterday, SpaceX launched another rocket to deploy a satellite that everything went as planned. And they said, hey, this is going to be an expendable rocket. We're not going to try and bring it back. And everyone thought the reason they were doing that was because they were, well, I think what the published reason was that the drone ship, Ocelli, of course, I still love you, the reason why that wasn't going to be available is because that was being prepared and set up for Falcon Heavy. And they didn't want to have anything damaging happen to this because yesterday's rocket that went off, it's Core 32, it is a flight proven or used rocket. Whereas the one that is going to be launched on Falcon Heavy, the center one that's going to land on the drone ship, is a brand new core. Mm. So they're like, let's fetch that one. So I'm sitting there and I watch the webcast, and they say, you know, we're not going to try and recover it. So I'm like, okay. So I watch the webcast. It launches. I go stand over at a door or at a window, my second floor, look out 140 miles away. I can see the comm trail. Very cool. And I go back to my desk and I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to let this webcast just run its course. I haven't watched one all the way through and the deployment of the satellites. And then all of a sudden, I'm not watching the technical one. There's two webcasts that SpaceX does. The technical one, which is no commentary, but just the SpaceX engineers that are talking on there that are saying, you know, loss of signal, MECO, all that stuff. And then there's the one with the commentary. So I'm listening to one with the commentary, but in the background, you can hear the technical one. And all of a sudden, you hear the guy in the technical one say something like recovery vehicle AOS, so acquisition of signal. And I'm like, recovery vehicle, what the hell? And then he says, first stage reentry burn started. I'm like, I didn't think that they recovered that. I thought it was just going to go in the ocean. Okay, so whatever. Like they do that to slow it down and come back in. I don't know what they're doing. Something, we'll see. So I kind of ignored that. And then the commentator said, oh yeah, you know, so here's the deal. We're not recovering it, but still we do still do some stuff. And then he says, reentry burn completed or stopped. And then a minute or two later, he says, landing burn initiated. I'm like, well, now hold on a minute. Yeah, that catches my attention.
Yeah.
And the guy and the commentator goes, yep, just to reiterate, we're not catching it, you know, that kind of stuff, whatever. And then he said, landing legs deployed. I'm like, no, hold on a minute. What the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
And then he says, stage one down, splash down. I'm like, so it did land in the water. I'm like, So, and the commentator just kind of said a couple things, you know, all that stuff. I'm like, well, okay, so maybe they're just, they weren't going to recover it. And I remember when it launched, I saw the landing legs. I'm like, why are you going to put the landing legs on, which are not exactly cheap? They're made of titanium. Those aren't. Why are you going to put the landing legs on? Why did you have the grid fins, which were titanium? Why did you put all those stuff on that rocket if you weren't going to recover it? Or you're not going to try and land it? And so I'm like, okay, it makes sense. You're trying out some new stuff. You're going to land it. You're going to at least try and land it and try and perfect your landings a little bit more than you already perfected them. Just not going to put it on a ship. This is going to be reusable, whatever. Well, then much later, about 3 hours later, Elon posted a picture on Twitter. Did you see this?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, now it's going to get good. So he posted a picture on Twitter and on Instagram. And his comment was, the rocket was meant to test very high retrothrust landing in water, so it didn't hurt the drone ship. But amazingly, it survived. We'll tow it back to shore. And it's a picture of a Falcon 9 rocket just floating in the ocean, which it's not going to sink if it stays intact because the tanks are filled with helium sure. now that they've expended their fuel. So it's much more buoyant than the water it's displacing.
Yeah.
So the best part was watching the comments inside of this Reddit thread that I just posted in the chat. And at some point, I think you're going to start cracking up here, but I've got 9 of the comments that I've pulled out of here. Now, there was one thread that I was trying to find and I couldn't find it, right? So one person comes back and says, great, they're landing them on accident now. Another one said, I have the final shot, like at the very end. It's a final shot to one person that you and I kind of deal with on Twitter or on Facebook a little bit. Another person said, it's the opposite of RUD, which was a rapid unscheduled disassembly when it blew up on the landing. This is a DUR, which is a delightful unscheduled recovery.
That's nice.
So here's a quote from Congress. It's a fake quote. Unlike failing SpaceX, we guarantee that SLS will be destroyed successfully every time.
Oh, the bird.
Here's another one. I was trying to tell a friend today that this would be the first time SpaceX has recovered a rocket that they were not trying to recover.
Yeah, that's true. Nice. So
the way that SpaceX names these are, they're called boosters, and they have different version numbers. This was B1032, so it's core number 32, the B10, don't just ignore that. Then they put a decimal on the end of it. Well, one person had a comment that says, looks like the landing legs even survived. Let's give B1032 the name of Michael Malloy. If you know who Michael Malloy is, he's from New York, an Irishman from New York back in the 20s and 30s who survived multiple murder attempts, finally was killed. But yeah, if you go search for Michael Malloy on Wikipedia, you'll see a whole thing about it. And there's songs about him and everything.
The comments on this are hilarious.
Oh, yeah. So someone else had another one here. You got to let me get through these real quick. Right? So,
that's right.
Another one, someone said, here's B1032.2. So the dot after it is the number of times it's flown. This is the second time this one's flown. B1032.2, be like, you can't kill me. Someone responded, I'm not dead yet. Another one said, I think I'll go for a swim. Another one responded, call me B1032.3.
'Tis but a scratch.
Yeah. All right. So this one, so watch the chat here. I got a link. I got a picture for you to go jump to Imgur on. This is a picture of Elon saying in a comment thread that's going, no way, this is straight out of Kerbal Space Program. Someone ask him what mod he's running.
That's hilarious. Now they've got the image of the thing floating in the ocean with all of the telemetry and stuff from Kerbal Space Program overlaid over the top. That's pretty accurate, actually. I like that.
All right. And my favorite, this wasn't my favorite. There were some other ones that were just freaking hilarious last night. There was some like going, hey, this is expendable. We're getting rid of you. You're not getting rid of me. I'm not going anywhere. That's why they call the drone ship, of course, I still love you. Nice. And then the best one, though, at the very end, which was someone that said, I bet Jeff Bezos can't do that. And the response was, well, considering their rocket doesn't exist yet, I would say no.
Oh, the burn. Yeah.
So for all of you listeners
that
are rolling your eyes and laughing your ass off at me and CJ right now for totally geeking out on the space stuff here, sorry, but if you're a space geek and you like the whole SpaceX stuff, go to this. There's over 1,000 comments. Start scrolling through the top ones and make sure that you open up where it says load more comments. Make sure you open up the sub thread of people who have responded because it is just, there's some witty, just pure awesome comments here.
So it's amazing this thing survived because all the others that have landed in the ocean have just exploded spectacularly. What's fascinating is this month, so February, they've got a lot of launches. So there's obviously Falcon Heavy, huge. That's on February 6th. They've got another Falcon 9 launch on February 10th, then another Falcon 9 launch on February 14th. That is a rapid schedule.
They're supposed to be doing 2x what they did last year.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It also, I mean, someone made another comment here that, and on the serious side, this really shows how well these things are built because this thing has now flown twice, landed once, and then landed in the ocean and not broken up.
Yeah, well, they were So apparently they were testing the rapid, what do they call it? Like it's a three engine deceleration burn right at the end, as opposed to a one engine deceleration burn. Yeah. I can't remember the exact wording they used, but yeah, that's the reason for this test, I think.
Yeah. So the idea, what they were trying to do here, and I said a little bit with in Elon's tweet, but I meant to be more specific. The reason they did this is because, like you said, they were trying out a new kind of landing. And the idea is that they were trying to see how late they could actually fire up the engines and do a high velocity slowdown right before it landed. So basically looking at it coming into a complete crash landing, but then at the last second firing the engines up and getting it to, you know, really quickly decelerate and then stop. By doing it that way, they need less fuel on the landing attempts so that they can use more fuel for the payloads.
Gotcha.
And the payloads higher up.
And I think Elon said something about in his tweet or reply to the tweet that it was easier on the drone ship as well.
It's easier
for
on
some
the drone.
Reason.
Yeah, and they're trying to do is to get to the point where they can get rid of the landing legs altogether and they can actually land it on like a structure that it fits right back on fits on a structure that then bolts it down to hold onto it, either on land or on at sea.
Gotcha.
Crazy stuff.
All right. Well, we've only got a few days to wait until the big one goes up. So fingers crossed.
Yeah. I'll be there, man. I doubt that there'll be any kind of cell coverage because so many people will be trying to like tweet and post and all that stuff. But
yeah, no doubt. I will be parked up in front of a high def TV with the webcast on as best I can.
Be cool. We'll see.
Very cool. Yeah.
All right, dude. Good show.
Yeah. Lots of great news. Tons of news. We're going to do a deep dive into some other topics. We've realized that we've been doing a bunch of news recently and we want to dive into a few topics. So the next, you know, maybe not the next shows, but over the coming weeks, there will be some deep dive shows going on by the sounds of it.
Absolutely. And hey, you know what? Last one, because I just realized we were going to do something and we just balked on it. Do you want to do this one?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, well, then I'll do it.
You better do it.
So this was going to be one of my picks, and we had someone
the other day.
And yeah. I was like, oh, yeah, we totally planned on talking about this. So this guy, the title of the post is NASA's long-dead image satellite is alive. And we had a listener submit this, so this is going to be our listener pick. I forget the gentleman's name. Do you remember off the top of your head?
No, but I'll look it up.
Okay. The idea is that what he does is he looks at, it's hard, but if you know how to do it, you can actually listen in and scan for the different radio frequencies that satellites are sending back. And where satellites are in the sky is they're published in known locations. So you have like sky watchers who are cataloging it, kind of like a Wikipedia kind of thing, but then official things are also up there as well. And that's how we kind of thought that, hey, the Zuma satellite didn't reach orbit because it's not where it's supposed to be or something like that. There was a satellite that many years ago, I forget when this was, but many years ago that NASA put up, 2005. And there's a satellite that when they put it up, it ran fine for a while and then it just disappeared and NASA lost it. And so they're like going, well, we've lost this satellite. We're not really sure what happened to it, but we can't find it. We can't communicate with it again. This guy found it. He found this thing that wasn't matching any of the other published locations for stuff.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it?
It matches the radio frequencies and the stuff that of what this other one was. And so he let NASA know about it. NASA's like, you found our satellite.
Yeah, I think that's incredible. And I think the theory of it is that it basically had to go through an eclipse so that it ran out of power and rebooted or something.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of the theory for how it came back alive. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it sort of restarted its systems and... But what's fascinating is hearing the theory about why it switched off and the detail that they go into about these safety measures and the switch that basically flips various things on and off if certain situations happen. Anyway, so they've got this whole theory about how it all came to be. And I just thought it was really, really kind of interesting that this person's found it.
I didn't realize this too. I saw this post I think he originally posted about this on his blog and then it showed up on Hacker News like on January the 24th. And he reached out to them 3 minutes later. They got back to him. The guy that was in charge of this, the image principal investigator, he came back when he's very excited. We'll get back to him with updates. And within a few hours came back and was like going, we think you've actually found something. And within just a few days, they linked up with him, the Goddard Space Flight Center. They detected it as well with his help. You got a guy in Russia was confirming it. It's really cool.
Yeah. So, okay. So credit where credit is due. Brad Butler, listener of the Cloud Show, at Brad Butler on Twitter. He apparently is a SharePoint Office 365 developer, sports fanatic, and hockey nut, developing on a rock out in the Atlantic Ocean.
Is that New Zealand?
No, Atlantic, dude, not the Pacific.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, my bad. Bermuda?
Yeah. Where is he? Let's see. Hold on. Let's see if he's got a location here on Twitter. Wow. St. John's in Newfoundland and Labrador.
Oh, up in Canada.
There you go.
Thank you very much for the shout out, man.
Wow. Yeah, thanks a lot. So yeah, apparently he's on a rock out in the ocean. How about that? And he's a SharePoint developer. That's pretty cool. Thanks a lot, Brad, for sending us your the link to this. It's a really interesting article and very much appreciated.
Yeah, that's really cool. I've been looking for, I think I found it. I did find it. Oh, you're going to love me. I'll put this in my show notes. It's called the Open DSky Apollo 50th Anniversary Make 100, an open source Arduino-based replica of an out-of-the-world computer.
Yeah. Wow. I want it. We'll make it happen.
Listener pick. And there you go, CJ.
All right. I will check it out.
All right. I think that's... now we can wrap our show.
Yeah, fair enough. Now we've got the important stuff done.
Awesome. Hey, thanks everyone for tuning in.
Indeed. Indeed. Thanks again, AC.
Yeah, man. Take care.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3, and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.